The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Doing a volume check. I think it's okay, right? It sounds okay for me. Does it sound okay? It's nice to see some familiar, friendly faces. Thank you all. So when we think about kindness, we may think that kindness is kind of wimpy. It's something that we turn to maybe with a little bit of dismay only when wisdom or clarity or incisiveness or maybe even intense love has failed us. When all that has failed, maybe we'll turn towards kindness. And certainly kindness kind of ranks low in our cultural desirability, not only kind of like in the Buddhist world, but certainly in the greater society. We can imagine that things like intellect is held up really high, maybe having a sense of being invulnerable or being powerful, or maybe even having a sharp wit, and countless other qualities that society tells us is very desirable and perhaps even more desirable than kindness. In fact, when we think about heroes in our movies, in our books, maybe their distinguishing characteristic isn't kindness. That's kind of the sidekick tends to be kind, not the primary hero. The same with TV shows, the popular girl. She may be daring or bold, striking, imposing, amusing. She may not be kind. It's kind of a second banana position, who is kind. But in fact, I like to say that kindness is quite powerful. It can be very powerful in our lives, in our practice. So I'd like to talk about, rather than delegating kindness as some quaint old-fashioned virtue, in fact, it can be a guiding principle in our lives. We can make a commitment to kindness and it can make a difference. And I'm inspired to talk about this by a book that I read recently by Sharon Salzberg. Some of you may know Sharon Salzberg, may have even practiced with her. I think she's an extraordinary person. She had a lot of suffering early in her life. And as a young person, I think she was in college and maybe like 18 years old, went to India. She had heard about meditation and she went to India and found a meditation teacher and started a practice and meditated. And there she met Joseph Goldstein. And then when they came back to the United States in the early 70s, Sharon and Jack and Joseph and Jackie Schwartz helped kind of bring they started this whole tradition that we practice in to America, to the West. It's not that long ago, right? They're still alive. Sharon, she was teaching in Berkeley about half a year ago. She lives in New York City now. So kind of I want to dedicate to her to kind of honor these pioneers of bringing this practice to the West. I know that Gil, the founder here, he has practiced with Sharon. I haven't. So Sharon Salzberg has this book, one of her lesser-known books, perhaps. It's called The Force of Kindness. And in this book, she kind of outlines the different ways in which kindness can be really powerful and in a way that we can bring it into our lives. So it's being inspired by that book that I'm giving this talk. And I borrow from that book, as well as adding some of my own ideas and some other ideas in here, too. But if we want to think about kindness, we may reflect on who are the people that we admire, people that we know, people that have touched our lives. Who do we admire? And why do we admire them? If we think about that, we may see that kindness probably does bubble up towards the top, right? And like maybe some of the cultural trappings or the stories that we have, or it's more about heroism and all its different forms, people that we know and respect and want to spend time with and maybe even emulate, are kind, most likely. And when we think about the life of the Buddha, he was somebody who had a wholehearted commitment to the welfare, benefit, happiness of others, of people. He dedicated his entire life to this. He was committed in such a way that it was inclusive and with a wholehearted consideration for others and how he can serve them and support them and care for them. So in the same way, we can make a commitment to kindness. Maybe we won't be Buddhas, but we can make a commitment to caring for others and caring for ourselves. And the act of making a commitment itself can be very powerful, a type of concentrated intention or maybe an aspiration to be kind. It can be a thread that twines throughout our lives and our intimate relationships and our non-intimate relationships, people that we just pass by, the grocery clerk, the person at the gas station who's putting gas in the pump next to you. But having a commitment, whether it's to kindness or whatever it is, can also provide some stability in our lives. Can be a ballast that can help us not be pushed around by all of our experiences, the winds of change. If we don't have a commitment, then every experience, every circumstance, where every emotion can sweep us away or have us feel a little bit off balance. There's a potential to do that, won't necessarily do that, but having some clarity about what is important in our lives, what is our life about, can help provide direction, can help provide a North Star. And it can help us live our lives in a way that makes our lives count to ourselves. Makes it so that we're not satisfied with someone else's construct of how our lives should be, but instead we decide this is what's important. And this is the direction I'm going to go. This is what I'm going to use to help me make decisions. And this way we can fashion our lives around what we care about deeply. And we can bravely, unstintingly practice for our own good and for the sake of all life. So that the situations we find ourselves in don't govern what we care about deeply, they will affect us. But if we have a commitment, an aspiration, then our situations, as they change, what we care about deeply, we can hold still, we can keep as a solid. Our situations don't have to define us at our core, who we really are, what we want to be. Our situations won't delineate or dictate what we might be, won't dictate our potential. I know our situations that we find ourselves in won't dictate our confidence, our courage, our tolerance, our love. So in this way, making a commitment, whether it's to kindness or to anything, can be a great support for our lives. It's worthwhile spending some time. What is really important? What is worthwhile dedicating our lives to? So making a commitment to kindness in particular can be powerful. It can be expressed in how we act, of course. Are we taking the time to listen to the person who perhaps has a habit of talking an awful lot? Are we listening to the person who just received terrible, terrible news? Are we able to hold the space and be with them as they kind of process and share and work through this terrible news, whatever it might be? Can we be kind and give a smile and acknowledge people when we pass by them? Let them know that they're seen. There's lots of small ways we can be kind. They don't have to be grand gestures. Of course, many of you who have been in the Dharma scene for a while know also some of the instructions about speech that the Buddha gave for us include the instructions to have speech that is kind. Kind, timely, beneficial, and true. And the Buddha's instructions, there isn't room for harsh speech. It's to be said in a way that a person can hear at the right time, in the right setting, in the right context, in a way that supports them, is beneficial, helps them. Maybe helps them see things more clearly. Maybe helps them to understand themselves better. Doesn't mean that we don't say, it doesn't mean that we're never saying anything that they don't want to hear. In fact, if you go through the suttas, there's a number of times where the Buddha is saying something. It's not the most kind, to be frank. But he's saying this to people who are going the wrong direction. And he's telling them, you're being foolish. He just calls it like it is, in his view. But he does that in the context of, and I imagine, right, I wasn't there obviously, but I imagine with a heart of wanting to support them and help them. So if we have a commitment to be kindness, we have a challenge to how can we say things that are kind and true, beneficial, but may not be what somebody wants to hear. How can we be strong and still be kind? How can we say no when we need to say no in a kind way? How can we say yes when we need to say yes in a kind way? So kindness can also be about how we incline our minds. Are we inclining our minds towards things that are benevolent, that are generous? Or are we inclining our minds towards ill will, anger, hatred? Of course, our minds are a mixture. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, you should only have kind thoughts. It's a little bit ridiculous if any of you have minds like I do. My mind's not, I have unkind thoughts sometimes. But the practice is to notice and to not act on them. We're not asked to be something that we're not. And of course, some of you may remember there was a number of years ago where this idea of emotional intelligence was really popular. I feel like in the corporate America business communities was this idea that to be effective leader, to be an effective team member, it really helped to have what was called this, emotional intelligence, to understand how our emotional life affects us unconsciously and consciously. And it doesn't affect only us, of course, it affects others. And now the physiologists will tell us, you know, that they measure these things. So I was just reading, I was a little bit fascinated by this, that if there's individuals, they measure their heart rate and their, I think their breath rate and maybe their blood pressure. So some of these, you know, physiological signs. And I think they would ask them also, you know, about their mood and their emotional state. And they bring people that maybe had really disparate emotions and different physiological signs. They come in and they have a meeting. After 15 minutes, they measure these things again, and everybody's kind of gone similar, right? That they're closer together. Emotions are contagious. Kind of in the same way like a cold is contagious, right? It spreads to others around us. Of course, strong emotions like anger and hatred can have a bigger effect. But joy, happiness, kindness is also contagious. So not only having a commitment to kindness can help us provide a North Star for our lives, maybe one of a few North Stars, but it also affects those around us. Neurologically speaking, we're really, you know, so I talked about the physiologists, now we can say the neurologists will say in some ways we're like an open loop system, neurologically speaking. As a body, of course, we're like a closed loop, closed container. Otherwise we'd be leaking our bodily fluids all over the place. But neurologically, our systems are such that we receive input from our environment and our neural impulses can be affected. And in fact, they are affected. And this is measured. Also, they measure these things when we get people and groups together. Right. So the scientists are telling us something that we already know. Right? You know, you get affected when you're with somebody who's really angry, somebody who's really sad. But also people who are happy, people who are kind and thoughtful. We are affected by them. So in this way, being kind can actually be powerful. It can affect others. Maybe I'll... kindness inspired this poem. Maybe I'll read, not maybe, I will read, that some of you may be familiar with. I've heard it a few times in Dharma talks. I'm going to share it here, and I'll put a little bit in context. I think it's very powerful. I myself feel very touched by this poem. It's by Naomi Shihab Nye. She writes, "Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you hold in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go. So you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the person in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow and a friend. I feel touched by this poem because it feels, you know, she brings in death and sorrow and desolation and mailing letters and purchasing bread. And so there's an ordinariness about it as well as something really powerful. The story behind this poem is Naomi Shihab Nye, who I should say she grew up in Palestine and Jerusalem and Texas. Kind of an interesting combination. She went to school and studied English literature and religion. She became a famous poet. And this poem was written while she was on her honeymoon, newly married. They had decided to travel in South America, and they were on a bus that got attacked by highway robbers. And the robbers killed somebody and stole everything from everybody. So here's Naomi with her new husband in South America, I don't know where exactly, with nothing. A little bit frightened. And a person came up to them, saw how frightened and maybe a little bit freaked out they were, and listened to their story and was very kind to them and helped them out as best as they could, as this person could. And then, this was years ago, so her husband then hitchhiked to a big city, the nearest big city, to see if they could, what they could do with their money. And this was back in the days of traveler's checks, those of you who remember this. And they were going to see if they could get their money reinstated some way. So Naomi was left there by herself. I don't know why this decision was made. So her husband goes off to hitchhike to another city, and she has absolutely nothing. And the city, and it's getting dark, and she doesn't even have money for a place to stay. She said the only thing she had left was her notebook and a pencil in her back pocket, and she wrote this poem. She said she felt inspired. This poem just fell out of her onto the page. If I may, I'd like to read the poem again, kind of with this as a background. She writes, "Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you hold in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go. So you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out of the windows forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the person in a white poncho lies dead. by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for." And then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. I can imagine that this person in South America, who saw this person from North America, frazzled, scared, frightened, and was just kind to them, had no idea that this person would be a poet, who would write a poem, who would be part of a collection, would then be read by thousands of people, and would be spoken about here tonight. Touch me, maybe touch you. We don't know when we are kind to others what might happen. We don't know the consequences of many of our actions. But I like to think about this person who helped Naomi Shihab-Rai and her husband as just a simple person, just doing what he felt was the right thing to do at that time. It wasn't a grand gesture. He was just helping out. So in this way, this could be like, for me, this is an example of how powerful kindness can be. It can influence others in ways that we might never know. But if we want to have a commitment to kindness in our lives, it requires a few things of us. Requires a letting go of perhaps some of our belief systems about what is kindness, to whom should we be kind, to whom should we not be kind. Maybe we have to let go of a sense of my tribe, us and them. Maybe let go of our preferences for how people do things, how institutions do things, how cultures do things. If we have a commitment to kindness in all aspects of our life, to soften some of these, let go of them. We also have to let go of our distractions, things that don't support us in our lives, that confuse us or keep us away from keeping clear what are our commitments in our life. Let go of all those things that are not aligned with our commitments, including our commitments to kindness. In order to have this commitment to kindness, it also requires a certain amount of acceptance towards life. And accept that we can only do our best. And our best may seem like not nearly enough sometimes, but we do our best anyway. And we have to accept that sometimes we might feel discouraged. Because we can't, our kindness maybe doesn't make a difference, doesn't seem to make a difference. But when we feel discouraged, we can come back to remembering what we can do. When we're in the midst of feeling of what, or remembering what we can't do, a commitment to kindness can include a commitment to remembering what we can do and what makes our lives meaningful. And having a commitment to kindness also requires that we're kind to ourselves. This might include some self-forgiveness. We make mistakes. We don't always know the right thing to do. Or even if we do know the right thing to do, we may be in the grip of fear, anger, ill will, impatience, pain. We may be in the grip of all these things and behave unskillfully. Or maybe we think we are behaving skillfully and only later with more information or subsequent events we discover that actually we harmed others. And let's face it, we don't always remember the lessons that we learn, right? Either in our practice or in life. I certainly have this practice or this experience of thinking like, okay, I think I know that if I can stay grounded, then my life goes better. But it's so often I get ungrounded and I'm stuck in my thoughts, thinking and trying to figure everything out and kind of like lose my way, trying to think and figure everything out. I'm so caught up in figuring things out, forgetting that if I can just slow down and feel my feet on the ground and feel grounded, have a little more space, things generally unfold better than if I'm trying to fix them. And sometimes disillusionment, despair, discouragement, they kind of have a grip on us. But can we remember that we are bigger than just these smaller, maybe when they have a grip on us, they're not small, but at times can we remember that it's not all of who we are, it's not the entirety of who we are. We can forgive ourselves and just recommit to kindness again and again and again and again and again, right? Sometimes that's what's required. But everything is changing. Nothing is fixed. Nothing is permanent. We can always start again. We can always begin again. And having kindness towards ourselves, we can heal that when we realize that those damaging actions that we might have done to ourselves, to others, to the environment, they're only part of who we are. And they're only part of who we might yet become. It doesn't define us completely. And it doesn't define who we might be, who we can be, our potential. So one way to have kindness towards ourselves or to support this is to reflect on our goodness. Not in a way to reinforce our neurotic self preoccupation, but to recognize that even small, minor accomplishments that might have been fleeting, they can help bring a lightness of the heart, a buoyancy. Bringing those to mind can help kind of shift the way that we're thinking or feeling. And with that shift in the way that we're thinking and feeling, it's easier to look honestly and directly at those times we haven't been skillful. At those times, and perhaps we have caused harm. And we can go beyond them. If we remember some of our goodness, it can remind us of what we are capable of. We can reflect on the times when we've had to make a difficult choice, but we did make a choice in a way that supported ourselves and supported others. We can reflect on the times when we've been truthful. We can reflect on the times when we've been loving, caring. We can reflect on the times we've tried to help someone instead of just carelessly walking by or ignoring the situation. If we can acknowledge the good within us, then this commitment to kindness or a commitment to make a difference doesn't come from a place of, oh, I was bad and I want to be better. It comes from a place of acknowledging what might be. It comes from a place of allowing space to what's already inside us to blossom, to grow, to bear fruit. We can see that we are far bigger than the person who might have done some wrongs, made others uncomfortable. We're bigger than the person that is delineated by our family expectations, our cultural expectations. With a commitment to kindness, we can a big life. When we realize we are capable of so much more than we often dare to imagine, but with a commitment to kindness and reflecting on the goodness that we do have, we can dare. We can dare to imagine greatness. Not greatness in grandiosity, but greatness in a meaningfulness. Also, kindness towards ourselves is a middle way. The middle way between this overindulgence of the senses that often is really encouraged kind of by society today, this thinking that if we have just more and more experiences of pleasure, however fleeting they may be, somehow that's the way to go. It's also a movement away from the punishing relationship we might have with our own minds if we practice intense criticism. I don't know about you, but my mind is often very critical. I'm sometimes quite mean to myself. I can't believe it. When I stop to actually look or listen what I'm saying to myself. I would never say these things to a friend of mine, but I'm saying them to myself. We may be disgusted by our fears, frightened by our desires, ashamed of our anxieties, struggling with our emotions. But kindness is a middle way away from that. Just towards kind of accepting our experience, accepting how we are, but without painting a veneer of idealism over reality. Kindness is about having the courage and the willingness to see things as they really are. Not how we wish them to be, not how we fear them to be, but how they really are. In order to do this, it can be helpful to notice when others are acting in a way that we think is unskillfully, when we ourselves are acting unskillfully. Maybe we can use this, the word suffering. Oh, they're suffering. In the Dharma teaching, suffering is part of all of our lives. So instead of saying, oh, this is bad, or this is good, or wrong, it's wrong, or bad, or contemptible, or what other words we might use, we can say, oh, this is suffering. And that way we can maybe bring some kindness and some compassion to it. So in this way, we can say that kindness can actually be quite powerful. It can be transformative. It can be a way that guides our life, helps us feel like we have a great life, a big life, an inspired life. It can help us have a life that our actions are aligned with our deepest values. So that at the end of our lives, of course, we can reflect, hopefully, with some happiness. And as we call to mind all those times when we were kind to ourselves and to others. So maybe with that, I'll open it up for comments or questions about the force of kindness.
All right, talk like this? No, talk like this.
That's great.
Okay. I had a friend that was so kind that it was completely unusual. And in her workplace, she was in academia, and she was a professor, and then she was a school teacher. When she got into the public school system, people thought she was weird. They really couldn't get a grip on how this PhD person could be so naive. They took it as naive, and they were real mean to her. And I told her, your kindness is actually your shield, because you don't even know how to be mean back. So they are not affected. They're just baffled by how kind you can really be and how they can just keep shooting at you, and you don't even seem to notice. I mean, it was taking its toll on her, but that was her armor. That was really a way where she was able to protect herself. She just knew to not react with anger and hatred. And that was kind of cool.
And how did you feel knowing this person and seeing her being kind, even in adverse situations?
I've known her for 14 years, and I it still baffles me how she lives in this bubble of kindness all the time.
So you feel baffled.
I mean, I'm her mentor. So there's a lot of times that I learn from her too. But yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great that she makes people wonder what planet do you live on. And that's really, I mean, she's a talented lady.
You know, I work with somebody who is very, very kind, and I've just seen how people respond to him. It's quite amazing, actually. No, respond in such a nice way, like open up and in the face of kindness, and it's touching for me. It's very touching to see this, kind of to be around somebody who's kind.
My question is to her about, because I know a person who's very kind, but somehow she get hurt.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. She
get hurt.
she gets hurt
from somebody. So how do you deal with that? You know, somebody was kind to everybody and invite everybody to there, but you get sometimes really hurt from.
So I would say that actually we get hurt whether we're kind or not, right? Getting hurt is part of the human experience and having relationships with other people.
But how do you get this person to become kind again? To become kind again and forget what happened to her. That's the point.
Yeah. So part of kindness is learning to set boundaries too. Some kindness towards ourselves. It's not just towards others, it's also towards ourselves. And often we don't know what boundaries to set until we realize that they've been trespassed. And then we realize, like, ouch, oh, that's, wow, okay. So then it takes a little bit of courage to say, okay, I'm going to set boundaries here. I didn't really know how to do that before. I'm going to do it here. I'm going to say no to this and maybe yes to that. But it also takes courage to feel the hurt, to say, wow, I was kind and generous and I got taken advantage of, or somebody didn't respect me in that way. It takes courage to say, you know what, but I know what's important to me. I know what I want my life to be about. We can live a life where we try to be shielded and never feel any hurt and pain, but then our lives get awfully small if we're trying to avoid this and avoid that because it may be painful. But if we can have a commitment to kindness and a commitment to wishing the well-being of ourselves and others, we may have difficulties, but we may also have a strength, have a ballast that can support us in those difficulties. And then later in our life, part of the Buddhist practice is to recognize we're going to die. And then at the end of our lives, we can reflect on those we've helped, the kind, small kind gestures. We're not talking about giant things. And we can have some buoyancy in our hearts. We can have some lightness in our hearts when we reflect on how we lived our life. And we do affect others. Right? As I mentioned here, if we can maybe reflect that some of the difficulty, even though we feel hurt and betrayed or whatever it may be, we can recognize that if we can find some kindness or some goodness in whatever way, we affect others. In the same way, if we fall back on the anger or the hatred or the ill will or the hostility, is that what we want to be doing with our lives? Do we want to be spending our lives that are those emotions are the ones that are leaking out of us and affecting others? Or do we want kindness, care, respect for others? Do we want that to leak out of us? So maybe it takes taking a big picture. I wish I could say that if you're kind, you won't get hurt. If you're kind, people won't take advantage of you. If you're kind, you know, you won't be betrayed. But I can't say that.
If you are kind and get hurt, it hurts more than if you're not kind.
I don't know about that.
I was thinking about something you said earlier about emotions being like spreading a cold.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, one way to prevent yourself from getting a cold is to have a strong immune system. So I was thinking about there can also be a way in which we can build an immune system, or, you know, like guarding the sense doors, so that some of these things that might come to us in an unkind way don't, we don't necessarily have to be, we have some choice about how affected we are by them, I think.
Fantastic, Jim. I like that. Right? And so part of building our immune system could be spending time with people that have similar values that we admire, respect, and trust. Getting clear what our values are in our life. It's a way to kind of like build up our immune system so we're not as affected. Maybe at the end I said we could think of, instead of saying this is wrong or this is bad or contemptible, we could say this is suffering. That could help us with our Buddhist practice to see, okay, so what is the cause of this suffering? How can we find a way with this suffering? I like this a lot, Jim. I could just go with this, like this whole immune system idea. Fantastic. Thank you.
One thing that's helped me with, sometimes, more, you know, the last few years, I'll notice that somebody's said something or done something that would be hurtful to me, would have been hurtful to me a few years earlier, and then I'll notice that it doesn't, I don't feel like it's painful, because if I can see why they're doing that, where it's not personal, it's not about me, it's not about them, it's circumstances, causes and conditions. So that's just the way that their suffering manifests.
Yeah.
And when I see it that way, yeah, a lot of that suffering on my side isn't there.
Thank you, Neil. This is a great idea. Right, it's just things arise for conditions. Right, so suffering arises because the conditions are there. In the same way, I want to say that if we have this commitment to kindness, we're creating the conditions for some other kindness and some good things to arise in our lives. And we don't have to take everything personally. We're not responsible for absolutely every bad thing that happens to us, nor necessarily every good thing. So it's 9:01. I'm happy to talk to you or make a comment afterwards, but maybe right now I'll let you guys go for the evening, and wish you all a wonderful evening, and may you experience some kindness today and tomorrow. Thank you.